ASP Audio is today talking to Dr. Kerry Hancock, a GP in Happy Valley, South Australia. Hi, Kerry.
Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
Good, thanks. So we're talking about a research article published in the January-February 2012 edition of AFP titled Microbiological Contamination of Spirometers, an Exploratory Study in General Practice. And the article starts by making the point that at that time about two-thirds of Australian general practices own a spirometer. Why did your group decide to do this study?
Well, in fact, we know that probably now even more practices own a spirometer, so the study has probably had even more impact. We did it because we had some data from the Netherlands with a colleague that we were working with, and his research had shown that a lot of the primary care practices there who do a lot of spirometry were not maintaining their spirometers according to the manufacturer's guidelines, in particular to infection control issues. So we wondered what was really happening in our own backyard about that. When we did a literature review, we also found that there had been some evidence over the years of microbiological contamination of spirometers in lung function labs, but no documented evidence of ongoing contamination to a patient, so no adverse patient outcome. But we thought, well, what happens if our spirometers in Australia are not being looked after properly by the practices, and could there potentially be some microbiological contamination of our spirometers, which, you know, may or may not have an adverse effect on patients? So we embarked upon a little study where we decided to swab 16 spirometers, and I was very surprised, I must admit, that four of those spirometers came back showing potentially pathogenic organisms on them.
So, well, the full details of the swabbing methods and the like are in the article. Can you give us the sort of headline view about, you mentioned four spirometers grew something, but what you found and why you think that might be?
Well, one of them I think we can exclude. One of the spirometers was a very old spirometer. It grew a fungus, and you could actually see the black fungus on the mesh of this spirometer when I swabbed it. But that spirometer, we subsequently found out, hadn't been used for quite a while. It had a broken part, and therefore was not going to be put back into use because I had actually ordered another spirometer. But three other spirometers grew Pseudomonas or Pseudomonas-like microorganisms from either the flow head or the turbine or, you know, the bit that's actually in contact potentially with the patient. So that was a little bit alarming. And as part of the study, we also asked the operators of the spirometers, which were usually the practice nurses, to fill out a questionnaire about this spirometer, some demographics about the practice, how often they were using the spirometer, and in particular about whether they had a cleaning protocol in place and exactly what they were doing in regard to cleaning their spirometers. And from that, we discovered that quite a few of them weren't really following what we knew were the manufacturer's guidelines for their particular spirometers. So, for example, as one spirometer called Aspirobank G spirometer has a turbine in it, and that turbine should be removed and cleaned or disinfected between every patient use. And it was obvious that a lot of the practices didn't even know that the turbine could be removed from the spirometer, let alone the fact that the recommendations from the manufacturer in their little booklet said that it should be cleaned before every patient use.
And so table one provides all the details about the survey and the cultures and the like if people would like to look at the specifics. But I suppose in the big picture, how did you interpret these findings?
Well, I think what was obvious was that people didn't read the instructions that came with their spirometers. A lot of them didn't even know that there were some instructions somewhere around, although the instructions are available for each of the spirometers off the internet if you search for them. but a lot of them didn't even know where their instruction booklet was. And so I suppose it also raised the issue about the whole quality assurance around spirometry, about whether people have been adequately trained in spirometry, whether they are doing other aspects of QA, such as regular calibration of their spirometers, and then the whole infection control issues, even things like, you know, do they wipe down the spirometer maybe with an alcohol wipe between every patient, which is a recommendation and certainly good practice, and let alone what they're doing with the flow heads or the turbines. Now, those people who, those practices that use a spirometer that has disposable flow heads, then that's not an issue except for wiping down the spirometer where the patient holds onto it, or practices that are using barrier filters, but none of our 16 practices actually use barrier filters, and that's understandable because barrier filters are quite expensive. They're about $4 or $5, and a lot of them were using one-way mouthpieces, and I think because of that they thought that contamination and infection control wasn't an issue, that they thought that the one-way valved mouthpiece might cover them from everything, but it's actually not really. We can't be guaranteed that a one-way valved mouthpiece is truly going to prevent bacterial viruses from coming back through it. And most of spirometry that's done in general practice is expiratory spirometry.
Yep.
Therefore, you know, we're not asking patients necessarily to do inspiratory manoeuvres, so that does reduce the risk of contamination. But as anyone who's done spirometry knows, that you might be telling a patient to blow into a machine, but sometimes they don't quite hear what we say and they suck it in instead.
Yes.
They do accidentally an inspiratory manoeuvre. And the one-way valve does help reduce that risk, but you know, we can't always be absolutely sure that patients are going to do exactly what we say for them to do with a procedure that takes a little bit of skill to undertake.
So what would be your ideas about what to do in the future based on what you've found?
Okay, well, I think that operators of spirometers need to be very familiar with the manufacturer's guidelines for their particular spirometer, to source the manufacturer's guidelines for their spirometer, have a look through what they have to do about calibration, have a look at what they recommend as far as cleaning and disinfecting. If, especially if they're using a spirometer that doesn't have disposable flow heads, you know, a spirometer such as an Easy One has disposable flow heads, but if they're using a spirometer that has a turbine, then they need to be very careful about the cleaning protocols and to follow those. Just until we have further evidence about whether potential contamination can have an adverse effect on a patient. Because a lot of the patients that we're seeing in general practice for respiratory conditions, I mean, you know, you don't necessarily know whether they're immunocompromised. You don't know whether, you know, they've contaminated already with Pseudomonas, you know, a patient with chronic lung disease like bronchiectasis. I mean, we may not be dealing with patients who are sick as in a tertiary centre, but, you know, we're dealing often with undifferentiated illness. And so I think we are beholden to be careful and follow those infection control guidelines.
Yes. And so, if there's sort of one take-home message, would you, in a sentence, can you think of what that would be?
Read the instructions that come with your spirometer.
Yes, and follow them.
And follow them.
Indeed. Mm. Excellent. Thank you for talking to us today, Kerry.
It's a pleasure, Caroline.
And if people would like to read the article, it's in the January-February 2012 edition of Australian Family Physician. Thank you.